to the researcher. It is the customary fate of new truths to begin as heresies. Thomas Huxley, thank you for staying with me. I realize that many of the ideas I expressed have probably been as challenging for you to deal with as they were for me. If nothing else, I hope that you found some of the information in support of my ideas interesting. I have always enjoyed new perspectives, and I believe that it is important to be willing to express them. Every perspective has something to contribute, but no perspective can contribute anything unless it is communicated. An important fact to keep in mind is that knowledge is, to a degree, an historical phenomenon in itself. Nearly every civilization, at any given moment in history, has possessed a broadly accepted body of historical, social, and scientific teachings to explain nearly everything. The irony, of course, is that many of those teachings are different today than they were back in the 1300s. More than likely, scholars working 500 years in the future will be as amused by some of our 20th century teachings as we are by some of the established teachings of the 14th century. It is therefore helpful to step back from one's own time and to understand that knowledge has never been an absolute, despite assertions to the contrary. Rather, knowledge has been an ever-changing commodity as it is enhanced and refined over time. The completion of this book marks the completion of my research. Except for the possibility of one revision to correct any errors which I may discover or which are pointed out to me, I plan to do no more work in this area. This book demanded enormous financial, emotional, and social sacrifices that were enough to last me a lifetime. I hope to pass the torch of research to others. Despite its length, this book is but an outline. It only begins to present all of the information and evidence available on the subjects discussed. There exists an enormous body of data that I never had the time, money, or inclination to pursue, yet it is all highly relevant. I was also limited to the English language, so I barely utilized any non-English books or sources. Every chapter in this book could easily become a book in itself. My biggest problem was not one of scant and insufficient evidence. It was of being deluged with too much. I discovered that I could easily spend another 8 to 10 years accumulating it all and build a multi-volume encyclopedia from it, but that was not my purpose. When I began to realize the enormity of the project, I deliberately wound it down so that I would have some hope of presenting a one-volume book on the subject. I am trusting that others will add to what I have done by publishing writings of their own. I ran across many theories that I did not use. As radical as the ideas expressed in this book may seem, they are, in fact, somewhat conservative compared to other theories in current circulation. I tended to accept historical facts, dates, and personages as they are commonly accepted by historians. This may have been a mistake in some cases, but it is the approach I chose to take. A person researching the topics covered in this book will encounter many revisionist theories that attempt to overturn commonly accepted historical facts. For example, I ran into the George Washington Adam Weishaupt theory, which speculates that George Washington had been secretly removed from the U.S. presidency and that Adam Weishaupt of Bavarian Illuminati fame, who actually looked a bit like George Washington, had taken Washington's place after Weishaupt's disappearance from Bavaria. Another theory doing the rounds is that the television transmissions of U.S. astronauts on the moon were actually filmed in a studio. Yet another is that the Earth is hollow and that UFOs originate from a civilization in the world below. Perhaps one, two, or all three of these theories are correct, but because I did not find enough information to conclusively validate them in my own mind, I did not adopt them. People researching the role of secret societies in world history will sooner or later encounter the writings of Nesta H. Mrs. Arthur Webster. Mrs. Webster's works were published during the first two decades of the 20th century, and they bear such titles as The French Revolution, World Revolution, The Socialist Network, Surrender of an Empire, and Secret Societies and Subversive Movements. The main thrust of her books is that secret societies, especially the Knights Templar Freemasons, have been responsible for instigating most of the major revolutions of the past 200 years. Her works have provided later researchers with a great deal of ammunition upon which to build conspiracy theories of history. It is unquestioned that Mrs. Webster was very successful in bringing forth a great deal of valuable information that probably would not have otherwise reached us today. All of her books reveal exhaustive work. Mrs. Webster might have gone down as the top researcher in her field, and her contribution to mankind might have been enormous had her own personal perspective not been clouded. Mrs. Webster made a fatal mistake by concluding that the world's apparent Machiavellian source was a so-called Jewish conspiracy. In her book, Secret Societies and Subversive Movements, she devoted an entire chapter to the real Jewish peril, in which she blames the Jews for the Christian world's subversion. This anti-Semitic slant is so strong, as is an anti-German slant, that the value of her research is lost because a researcher cannot readily trust all of the information she presents. This is a shame, but it is also a good lesson to any researcher. It reveals that an anchored bias can utterly ruin any benefits that might otherwise accrue from this type of research. It also indicates the need to remain flexible in the face of changing history and evidence. Had Mrs. Webster lived longer and seen what happened to the Jews during World War II, her outlook might have been different. There were many avenues of investigation that I never had time to pursue, but which could bring forth some fruit, although I make no guarantees. I present them here in no particular order for those who might be interested in digging further. 1. Throughout the world, there is a very strong political and economic force, the labor union. Labor unions have done a great deal to improve working conditions for many working people, but there is no question that some union tactics have generated continuous conflict. Unionization has also had the effect of creating a mild form of feudalism by magnifying the superficial distinction between managers and non-managers, and bringing the two groups into conflict. Interestingly, one of the key forces behind the early American labor union movement was an organization known as the Knights of Labor. The Knights were a secret society with secret oaths, just like other brotherhood organizations. Although the Knights later dropped their mystical practices and eventually declined in strength, they played a role in creating the American Federation of Labor, AFL, which has since grown to become the major union in America. Questions to research might be, who started the Knights of Labor? Or were any of its founders members of other brotherhood organizations, as seems likely from the character of the Knights of Labor? 2. One argument against the idea that there has been a Machiavellian source behind human warfare is the fact that primitive tribal societies untouched by the Western world have also engaged in repeated warfare. This would seem to disprove the brotherhood connection and suggest that perhaps warfare really is just a part of human nature. Let me repeat that there are definite psychological factors behind human warfare that must be handled before the entire problem is solved. Machiavellian machinations merely increase the frequency and severity of war. Conflicts can still erupt without such machinations. It is, however, a remarkable fact that brotherhood-style secret societies are extremely pervasive throughout the entire world and exist even among very primitive peoples. In fact, such societies appear to be as common in the primitive world as they are in the civilized one. For example, Captain F. W. Butt Thompson, writing in his book, West African Secret Societies, says of Africa, "The native secret societies found amongst the peoples and tribes of the west coast of Africa are many. Nearly 150 of them are referred to in the following chapters. 1. Captain Butt Thompson divided those societies into two basic groups, mystical and political. Of the mystical type, he wrote, these approximate in organization and purpose the Grecian Pythagoreans, the Roman Gnostics, the Jewish Kabbalah and Essenes, the Baim, Bavarian, Illuminata, the Prussian Rosicrucians, and the worldwide Freemasons. In the course of the years, they have evolved an official class that may be likened to the priesthood founded by Ignatius Loyola, the Jesuits. 2. Some of the African secret societies were obviously brought in from the outside, such as the Mohammedan societies. In many primitive areas, however, from Africa to New Guinea, such societies are native. Questions to be researched might include, just how pervasive is this form of mysticism in primitive society? How did the primitive secret societies begin, and do they have legends of extraterrestrials? To what degree have they taught mystical beliefs that exalt and encourage war? 3. If a custodial society exists, then Earth's history may simply be a tragic footnote in a much broader history beginning long before human civilization arose on Earth. What might that history be? What caused the apparent ethical, social, and spiritual decay of the custodial society? Is there any way to find out? 4. On November 18, 1978, a tragedy occurred in the South American nation of Guyana. More than 900 men, women, and children were mysteriously murdered in an isolated religious commune known as the People's Temple, Jonestown. A large vat of drink containing poison was found at the scene, leading to an initial assumption that the deaths were caused by suicide. The victims' bodies were discovered lying side by side in neat rows, as though the people had drank the poison and had then lain down together and died. However, when autopsies were performed on the victims, it was discovered that 700 of the 900 people had died of gunshot and strangulation, not poison. They had not committed suicide at all. They were brutally mass murdered. It is very likely that those who drank the poison either did so involuntarily or did not know what they were drinking. The only people to escape the tragedy were not present when the 900 victims were murdered. There are no known witnesses to the entire event. The question is, who murdered the inhabitants of Jonestown? On September 27, 1980, investigative journalist Jack Anderson ran a column about the Jonestown incident. One newspaper headlined the column, CIA involved in Jonestown massacre? Mr. Anderson cites a tape recording made of People's Temple leader, Jim Jones, in which Jones referred to a man named Dwyer. According to Mr. Anderson, investigators have concluded that this was Richard Dwyer, deputy chief of the U.S. mission to Guyana. Dwyer had accompanied U.S. Representative Leo Ryan to the Jonestown encampment on that ill-fated day. Leo Ryan became one of the murder victims, but Richard Dwyer somehow was not affected and even claimed later that the reference to him by Jim Jones was mistaken. Richard Dwyer, as it turns out, has been listed in the East German publication, Who's Who in the CIA, as a longtime CIA agent. Dwyer had reportedly begun his career with the spy agency in 1959. According to Mr. Anderson's column, Dwyer replied, no comment, when asked if he was a CIA agent. After the massacre, investigators found at Jonestown large quantities of weapons and drugs. The drugs included powerful psychotropics, quaaludes, valium, Demerol, and Thorazine. Another drug found at Jonestown was chloral hydrate, which had been used in the CIA's secret mind control program known as MKUltra. Was Jonestown a CIA mind control experiment which recruited subjects, especially poorer black people, through the guise of religion? The Jonestown massacre was triggered when a U.S. congressman, Leo Ryan, flew to Guyana to investigate Jonestown personally after he had failed to obtain information about it from the State Department. Leo Ryan never lived to tell what he discovered, and nearly every last man, woman, and child was silenced. The massacre occurred during a time when many American newspapers were carrying stories about CIA mind control experiments, experiments which the CIA claimed that it was no longer conducting. Did the CIA slaughter 900 people to cover up the fact that it was still conducting such experiments on a massive scale in a small jungle compound in Guyana? Additional questions to be researched are, what is the true history of the People's Temple prior to Jonestown? What is Jim Jones' background? Who supported him and his early church? 5. Books, movies, and other art forms tend to give a romantic twist to UFOs, spies, assassination conspiracies, and so on. As we are perhaps beginning to realize, behind the romance, there lies some cruel and brutal psychoses. A significant problem in any society geared for overt and covert warfare is that sociopathic personalities tend to find a home in government. Sociopaths are not affected by qualms of conscience and often delight in harming others. They are frequently promoted to high positions within agencies engaged in warfare because such personalities are able to attack and harm others repeatedly without it adversely affecting them emotionally. Sociopaths with high IQs can be quite clever in how they harm others. This deviousness is often valuable to intelligence agencies. As history has shown, the more that a nation is oriented towards war, the more it will become dominated by sociopathic personalities. This domination, in turn, leads to a rapid decay of a nation and will eventually cause its ruin. This is one of the great dangers any nation faces when it becomes involved in long-term conflict, no matter how democratic and humane that nation might otherwise be. Questions to be researched might include, to what extent are true sociopathic personalities dominating governments today? And why do people tolerate them? Have those custodial religions which demand the worship of criminally insane beings as angels and God perhaps blinded many people to being able to see sociopathology for what it is? 6. This book barely touched on the influence of brotherhood organizations in Asian history. I discussed Hinduism, but there is a great deal more to be found. For example, the Bloody Boxer Rebellion of China in 1900 was instigated by members of an Asian branch of the Brotherhood Network, the Boxers. The Boxers were fiercely anti-foreign. They massacred over 100,000 people and often photographed the beheaded victims. And they stirred up a revolt which brought to China the armies of several major Western powers to quash the uprising. Questions to be researched might include: what other wars and uprisings in Asia were caused by Brotherhood organizations? What has the full impact of the Brotherhood Network been on the history of Asia? 7. A topic I had wanted to research deeper was the subject of drugs. We discussed drugs several times, but not in any great historical depth. While drugs seem to have always been a part of human culture, was there a time when drugs were really first pushed on society? If there was, when was it and who did it? 8. One highly publicized problem today is that of vanishing children. Many children are abducted every year by parents during custody disputes, by relatives, and by strangers. Many more children vanish by running away from home. Runaways and parental abductions are easy to account for, and they constitute the majority of missing child cases. There has been, however, some confusion about the extent of child abduction by strangers. In the early 1980s, the nation's leading missing child agency, Child Find Incorporated, stated that anywhere from 20,000 to 50,000 children were vanishing every year as the result of abductions by strangers. In 1985, Child Find revised that figure down to 600. I called Child Find to learn what caused such a dramatic change in the number. I was told that the earlier figure was really a broad catch-all, and that 600 was the true number of stranger abduction cases per year. To further confuse the issue, I later learned from another source that out of all runaways, about 3,000 in the United States disappear yearly without a trace. Will that figure also be changed? As the reader can see, there seems to be some genuine confusion regarding how many children are really vanishing. Many children are eventually found, of course. Others vanish completely. I became interested in this problem because of reported abductions of humans by UFOs. The UFO abductions we learn of today are those in which the human victims are returned. Are there many known cases in which UFO abduction victims are not returned? Might some of those instances involve children? I even found myself asking this unthinkable question. If the human race had been created as a slave race, might it still be providing manpower, perhaps in the form of human children, to the custodial society? A respected UFO researcher of this generation is Jacques Vallée, who has authored several influential books about the UFO phenomenon. Mr. Vallée was one of the first researchers to focus on the fact that the UFO phenomenon has been very closely linked to episodes of social change throughout history. Mr. Vallée also noted an apparent connection between ancient folklore and UFOs. Some of the little people in folklore have been described in much the same way as modern UFO pilots. UFO-like phenomena have also occasionally been described in old stories of the little people. One activity attributed to the little people in folklore was their frequent kidnapping of children. Many of those children would never be seen again. This was a major source of upset between humans and the little people. This raises some rather startling questions. Are there any recent child-stealing episodes with a UFO connection? Or is it conceivable that there could exist on Earth today a child-stealing network which feeds an ongoing custodial demand for human labor? These questions are admittedly far out and the stuff of supermarket tabloids, and certainly the most speculative of any asked in this chapter, but they may actually be worthy of investigation by some brave soul in light of all that we have come to know about the UFO phenomenon. I hope that some of the above questions will provide good starting points for additional research. In the final analysis, the important thing is to be flexible with ideas and even have fun with them. By sticking my neck out as I have done in this book, I hope that I will encourage other people to explore those topics about which they are curious and to share what they find. You and I may not always be right. The important thing is that we are willing to explore and communicate. Be careful that you do not base all of your beliefs upon a mere handful of writers, teachers, ministers, or scientists. Learn from them, but also explore on your own, and have fun doing it. Do not always look to others for approval of what you have discovered. If your integrity says that something is a certain way, stick to it, regardless of any snubs or criticisms. On the other hand, be ready to change if you discover, in your own mind, that you are wrong. Learning that one has erred is often a hard pill to swallow, but it is a part of the learning process. The man who pretends that he has always been right is either an egoist or a liar, and he does not learn much of anything either. Good luck, and happy sleuthing.